Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Oh, welcome back. This is former Congressman Denny Rebert filling in for Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative. They do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Good morning, Denny Rehberg. We're having a little problem, but we're having fun here. I'm filling in for Aaron Flint, Denny Rehberg, former congressman. I'm joined now by Dave Beattie. Dave's a friend of mine who has a degree out of MSU in engineering, a master's in economics, a doctorate in space physics, but more importantly, he's a state representative from Hamilton, and he chairs the Education Appropriations Committee up in Helena. Welcome, Dave, and why don't you talk a little bit about what's going on with education in Montana, what you see coming up in the next legislature.
Hey, Danny, it's great to have a chance to talk to you, and it's been too long since we've seen each other. We'll have to rectify that. So what's going on in Helena in education? It's always one of the hot topics we have there because the state puts a good deal of money into education, well over $1 billion a year. Here are the hot items that I see in this particular session. First of all, a little bit of background here. We have a constitutional obligation to equitably fund our public school systems. And as a consequence of that, and by the way, by the term equitably, by that I mean to ensure that, you know, basic opportunities are available to students across the state. And I also look at that equitability clause within the Constitution as to ensure that we have fairness to taxpayers who put a good portion of the bill for funding our schools. In order to meet that constitutional obligation, we have a very rigorous funding formula that actually calculates how much funding is to go to each school, and then divvies out how much the state must provide. And that money comes from a combination of income tax and the statewide property tax levy. And then it also calculates what the amount is that must be provided by the schools. And this is through property taxes as well. So that's the background. Now, an aspect of this formula is that it caps the inflation at 3% a year. And as everyone well knows, inflation has run above 3%, run above 3% for a number of years. And as a consequence, our schools fell behind in terms of adequate funding. And so we're looking to address that in sort of a novel way this session. And that's through a bill that is called the STARS Act that is currently being drafted. But the effect of this bill would be to bring about $50 million a year into the funding formula provided by the through state funds, not through local property taxes. What's unique about this particular approach is that for a district to receive their portion of that funds, there are two things they have to do. One is they need to raise starting teacher pay to around to a minimum of around $41,000 a year. This would make us competitive with states around us.
Thank you, Dave. We're going to run out of time. I appreciate you joining our program today. Again, this is Denny Rehberg filling in for Aaron Flint. I'm not doing it perfectly, but I haven't been fired yet.
Hey, are you going to?
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, good morning. Again, this is former Congressman Denny Rehberg filling in for Aaron Flint. Aaron's took a little break with his wife. He goes to the Middle East and does God's work over there for us. And this is his opportunity to pay his wife back by traveling to a convention with her. We got a real busy day tomorrow, which will be fun. We're going to do a telethon on behalf of Warriors in Quiet Waters. I hope yet this morning in this segment to have Jeff Miller on the air. Jeff is a former congressman representing the panhandle of Florida. And what's interesting about Jeff's district is before him with Joe Scarborough, who was a Republican, turned out to be a very liberal Democrat. And then following him after he left Congress is Matt Gaetz, very conservative Republican. And Jeff represented that district. But most importantly, Jeff came into Congress after I did and worked his way all the way to the chairmanship of the Veterans Committee. And he was very influential. After he left the United States Congress, he joined the firm I was with, which was Mercury Public Affairs. And ironically, Donald Trump's chief of staff now is Susie Wiles, and she was in our Florida office with Mercury Public Affairs. And so we're lucky to have somebody as good and bright as Susie Wiles in the Trump administration. Hopefully later on this afternoon, I'll be able to bring in somebody from the FBI that served over 30 years with the FBI around the country. He's got a phenomenal background, but since we have a new appointment, Kash Patel, to the FBI, hopefully he can give us some insights into the changes that are necessary in the FBI and whether Kash Patel is going to be able to be successful. One of the things I talk about, and shortly after I was elected to the United States Congress, my political consultant, a fellow by the name of Tony Payton, who's since passed away, made me put together a promises book so that I could keep track of the things I said on the campaign trail in the 2000 election, and I could view it from time to time. I hope the President of the United States, incoming, Mr. Trump, does the same thing with the promises book, because he made a lot of promises, and we're going to count on it. We need to turn the economy around. Some of us had to muck our way through the COVID situation. My wife and I had restaurants around the state of Montana, and we were forced, because of Mr. Fauci, to shut down our dining rooms. And then after it kind of slowed down, the whole COVID scare, it was very difficult to hire people back. It was financially devastating for a lot of small businesses around the country, and of course the restaurant industry was not immune to that situation. So we're really looking forward to President Trump coming back into the administration and being able to try and solve some of the issues that we're faced with. Earlier on, we had Will Trachman in with the Mountain States Legal Foundation talking a little bit about some of the things they're doing on behalf of the people of the state of Montana. They take on lawsuits. They sue the bad guys. They don't charge anything. That's what's good about the Mountain States Legal Foundation. They're out of Denver, but they're involved in Montana and Idaho, Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, and such. And he talked a little bit about being involved in the grouse issue, endangered species. That's one of those issues in Washington that is out of control. I hope tomorrow to have somebody with the Westlands Water District, which is the largest irrigation district in the nation. It's around 600,000 acres. They raise tomatoes, lettuce, mostly pistachios and almonds and such. And they have had to deal with the Endangered Species Act for a long time. As you can imagine, the senators from California are very liberal. They're very supportive of the Endangered Species Act as it harms many of the farmers and ranchers that are in the San Joaquin of California. I worked on that issue a little bit because it had to do with the Delta smelt, which I say is Latin for ugly fish. The Delta smelt was not natural to the area. It was introduced, but then it became endangered species in the mind of the Endangered Species Act. And so they flush the water into the Pacific to try and protect the salmon and the Delta smelt. And unfortunately, they don't look at the damage it does to the farmers who hire people and provide our food. And they always say, well, we can get our food from Mexico or California or Canada. We can always import that. The Delta smelt is more important than the livelihoods of the community. the communities within the San Joaquin. Well, we see that with the grizzly bear in Montana. We see it in other areas around the state. So I'm misrepresenting the state of Montana because I used to have an opportunity to be in the Yak. I could be in Westby. I could be in Alzada or Dell in traveling the state. And I just don't get that opportunity to keep track of what's going on. But we have very good representation in Washington. They're placed on really good committees. So I try and gather as much information as I can. But I'm misrepresenting you all in the state of Montana. So communicate with us, KBUL. They have an app, and we'll always have the opportunity to answer your questions or receive your comments. And that's what I enjoyed about being your United States Congressman in Washington, D.C. So, again, thank you. I'm filling in for Aaron Flint today, tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana, statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Welcome back. This is former Congressman Denny Rehberg. I was also your lieutenant governor and the state legislator from Billings back in the 80s. Seems like a long time ago. I was a teenage lieutenant governor, which was ironic. I was the first, the youngest lieutenant governor in country when I started under Stan Stevens, and I was the youngest when I quit. And unfortunately, I turned, well, not unfortunately, I turned 69 in October. So it feels like I've run the gamut of politics. It's kind of interesting what's going on in Montana. And I worry about a little bit about trends because there seems to be a pendulum of politics. When I served in the legislature, the first session, we were split 50 Republicans and 50 Democrats. The governor was Mr. Schwinden at the time, and because he was a Democrat, the Speaker of the House was Democrat, and then we shared back and forth the chairmanships. So we took appropriations, the Democrats took taxation back and forth. Ironically, the next session, the Republicans were in the majority in the House, but the Senate was split 25-25. The next session, the Republicans lost the majority. We were in the minority, and the Democrats were in the majority. So what happens is the pendulum switches back and forth based upon the feeling or the temperament of the electorate. That was the state of Montana. Congress has done the same. I served in the majority, and I served in the minority. I got to tell you, the majority is a lot better to be in. But again, you always worry about the vagaries of elections you don't know. And so we're really counting on the president to prove the kinds of things that he has promised to turn the economy around, maintain the tax cuts that occurred in the prior Congress, and ultimately make America great again. Again, we have to be ever vigilant in what's going on at the Montana legislature with Governor Gianforte, what's going on in Washington as far as are we fulfilling the promises? Have we turned the economy around? Have we put our feet back under us? You never know. So that's just my caution to those that are in Congress today, because I'm not. That's my caution to the state legislators and those that represent us in the various agencies, whether it's the Attorney General, Austin Knutson, or Governor Gianforte. It's going to be very important for us to fulfill the promises that we made. As far as the appointments of the president, that's really interesting. I'm glad he did that. One of the mistakes that was made when Governor Stevens took over was that the administration was not put together very quickly. When you have a 90-day session every other year, if you win the governorship, you better be prepared on January 1 of that year to take over the administration. And it took a while to get our feet under us in the 1989 legislative session because new people were coming in and we had a 90-day session. Things had to happen very quickly. This president is a lot smarter than he was the first time he took over, and he's really brilliant at what he's doing, is putting his team together now so the people of America can see it, and so the various agencies can feel comfortable in the direction it's going to take. Now, I've got to tell you, the bureaucrats are not feeling very comfortable because there'll be a new sheriff in town. One of the things I get asked a lot about is, do you support term limits? I did, but I think it was probably a mistake to have done that, because what we really need is term limits of those that serve in the executive branch. We call them the bureaucrats. Unfortunately, the bureaucrats live on and on and on. And so I remember Governor Stevens, when he took over as the governor after many years of a Democrat governor, he took over and he said, I'm in charge now. You're going to do what I say. And the bureaucrats within the various agencies said, well, maybe you're going to be around in 4 years, maybe not. Certainly you're going to be gone in 8 years. We don't know who's going to take power after you leave. And so the bureaucrats were really in charge. Well, that's what's going on in Washington, D.C. So when the president says he's going to clean up the swamp, it's very difficult to do. But we have a lot of confidence in this president in being able to do that, especially with his new committee with Vivek and Elon Musk. As a side note, I'm really proud of my daughter-in-law. She was in the first Trump administration as an undersecretary in border control and immigration. She's a young attorney, came out of Michigan, married my son, A.J. Reberg. And obviously, on day one of the Biden administration, she was fired. And you all know what happened with the border, border security, the kinds of things that were seen as a result of that. She's not going back to Washington because they have a two-year-old, and they moved to Columbus, Ohio, which happens to be where Vivek Ramaswamy set up his office. And she's now working in for Vivek in a different capacity. Her job is to look at his various companies that he manages on behalf of people for wokeism, trying to suggest that this company is a little bit woke and that one is not. And it's kind of an interesting role. I spent Thanksgiving out in Columbus, Ohio, in Vivek's home area. Jim Jordan happens to represent that district, but I think it's a fascinating job that she's got, even though she's not going back into border control. When I was a congressman, I was the co-chairman of the northern border, and you would say, well, why is that important? Well, what we found is, as the southern border was starting to be controlled more and more to the best of our ability, they were leaking into the northern border, especially in Montana, but from Washington, the state of Washington, all the way to the state of Maine. We were seeing prostitution coming over from the Asian countries into Vancouver, Canada, and then making their way in across the northern border. So you can't be on every committee. And you can't be involved in every issue on every committee. So we created what was called the Northern Border Caucus for the specific purposes of paying attention to the things that were going along the northern border. And what we did, of course, in Montana, you've got the plains of the two-thirds east, and the farmers and ranchers can see tracks going across, and they kind of can keep track. The biggest problems occurred for us in the forested areas of the western one-third of Montana, and we were starting to see people coming in. We know that's going to happen again. As we control the southern border, we're going to see that. So we beefed up the northern border when I was in Congress. We got more dogs. We got more helicopters. We improved the housing for the Border Patrol agents along the northern border. And to the best of our ability, we tried to control the illegal substances coming in. And we spent a lot of time working with the northern border. So One of the people I really wanted to talk to in this segment is on the phone now. And why don't we join with John Keeling. John, welcome. Are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me, Danny?
Now I can. Wrong button was hit. Not by me, by the producer, so I'm not going to take the blame. I've done a lot of dumb things already this morning. I haven't been fired yet. John, you were with the FBI. For how long?
Well, I'll start out. I graduated from high school right here in Billings many years ago. I went to a Christian college in Minnesota, and I spent 3 years as a CPA and over 33 with the FBI all over the country.
Tell us a little bit about the new appointee by the Trump administration for the FBI. Do you know Kash Patel? And do you think it can be turned around? And what needs to be turned around?
Well, Danny, I do not know this person. I've met Christopher Wray. I've briefed him. He seems like an outstanding man of character and nice. But I think Trump did the right thing. It's time to tell him, Chris, grab your playbook. Coach wants to see you. This is not funny. This is disgusting. We have cities in this country where people are unsafe walking down the street. Beautiful cities like Chicago, New York, L.A. And this is just my opinion. FBI resources have been wasted doing ridiculous things. There are women that have been raped. There's been murders. There's been assaults. The people in the field are not getting the support they need. The agents I worked with in Billings, Montana, were as dedicated in the whole state of Montana, dedicated and hardworking as any agent I have ever worked with in my life. And I'm talking high IQ, highly educated people. Some have PhDs, you know, West Point graduates, military officers. I was a CPA, attorneys, PhDs in the sciences. Crime is going unaddressed. People in Montana are not getting the justice they deserve. It is not the BRIC agents. Resources need to be reallocated. Why do we have 10,000 people in a building in Washington, D.C. telling us what to do in Billings, Montana? We don't have enough bodies to respond to crime.
Well, John, I want to thank you for peeling off and joining us unexpectedly. This worked out very well because I wanted people to hear from an FBI agent who understands the problem. We hope to talk to you again in the future. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Danny.
This is where Montana Talks Ag with Lane Nordlund.
After President-elect Donald Trump threatened to impose 25% import duties on Mexican goods, President Claudia Sheinbaum of Mexico says they could retaliate with their own tariffs. President-elect Trump says the tariff on Mexican imports will go into effect if the flow of drugs and migrants across the border doesn't stop. While the Mexican president says she's willing to engage in talks on the issues Trump mentioned, the Mexican president said that the drugs are a U.S. problem.
Hi, I'm agricultural meteorologist Brian Bledsoe with a few reminders. The December 2nd deadline for 2025 pasture, rangeland, and forage insurance is almost here. Don't miss out. Join me and Sylvius Insurance at the Montana Stock Growers Convention in Billings on December 5th, where I'll share a 2025 weather outlook during the opening general session. While you're there, visit the Sylvius booth to explore risk management tools for your operation. Connect with the Sylvius team and enroll in PRF by December 2nd at rainins.com.
USDA has announced two new programs to aid farmers with $2 billion in marketing assistance for specialty crops to help fruit, vegetable, and nut growers expand markets and maintain supply. Part of that includes $140 million for commodity storage assistance that will support producers in accessing storage facilities with high demand expected across the nation. I'm Lane Nordlund.
This is where Montana Talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, welcome back. Obviously, this is not Aaron Flint. This is former Congressman Denny Rehberg, and Aaron was kind enough to ask me to be his guest host Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. It hasn't gone off entirely without a hitch. We've had a few hiccups along the way, but what can you teach a former congressman? Probably not much. But I'm joined back on the phone with somebody we had on earlier. I had to cut off, unfortunately, because we went into one of those pesky advertising breaks. But Dave Beatty is back on the line. Dave, are you there?
Hi, Danny. I'm back.
Okay. Well, I do have to admit that I was Dave's best man in his wedding. How long ago was that, Dave? 45 years ago?
43 years.
You better remember that, or death.
It's long enough that I have to do the math.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it was up in Alaska, and it was kind of funny because I ended up going on a honeymoon with them. Well, not really. There were not many flights out of Alaska after they got married, and I just happened to be on the same plane. But Dave, I interrupted you. You were talking about education in Montana. Dave has a doctorate in space physics, a master's in economics, a degree out of MSU in engineering, but he was school board member after he retired teaching at West Point, retired back to Hamilton, was on the school board, and ended up running for the state legislature. Just won your fourth term, and you're the chairman of House Education Appropriations. So what's going on up there?
Well, Danny, I won't recap what I said earlier, except I'll quickly summarize. We do have a situation right now with the funding of our public schools that due to the way our funding formula is set up, we have not adequately addressed the surge in inflation that occurred a couple of years ago because we cap our inflation increases in the constitutionally mandated funding formula. So the way that we're approaching that, I think, is a little bit novel, though. I'd like to put that out for your listeners. Right now, we are putting together a bill called the STARS Act that will bring something like $50 million a year into the K-12 school system. Now, this is on top of funding that's over $1 billion a year that is currently there. And this is in place to achieve that catch-up for inflation. Now, what's different about this is rather than just throwing money into the system, the school districts across the state will have to meet a few requirements in order to access the funding. One is we have a critical problem with starting teacher pay compared to our states around us, and it makes our teacher pay non-competitive, particularly at the starting level. And so for a district to access this money, they'll have to raise their starting teacher pay. And right now that target is around $41,000 a year. The other aspect of this bill is that some of the funding that's being made available will be based upon how many college credits or career and technical education certifications were earned by your previous year's graduating class. So it's pay for performance, if you will. This is different than a lot of the ways that we fund education and other things in the state, in that we have, you know, specific conditions that meet real problems and hence make the funding contingent on these things.
Tell us a little bit about the committee itself, the full committee. Who's the chairman of House Appropriations? Does he or she have a lot of experience in education or the other areas? And what do you anticipate happening as far as the entire appropriations bill? Because, you know, that's the biggest thing the state of Montana's legislature has to deal with every other year, which is getting a lot more complicated. What's going to happen in the full committee?
Well, in House Appropriations Committee is chaired by Representative Lou Jones out of Conrad, and he is at this point the longest serving legislator in the House. He's been involved. He's chaired the Appropriations or the Senate Finance and Claims Committee, which is the counterpart over in the Senate, over the years. He formerly chaired the education subcommittee, appropriations subcommittee that I chair currently. Representative Jones has been pivotal in coming up with meaningful and sensible funding for our schools that are based upon performance, and he's very much performance based. Has a performance based mindset, as do I. So I think that the House Appropriations Committee is set up very well to deal with the governor's proposed budget. As the governor has endorsed the idea of making up for inflation, and has included that in his budget, you know, contingent on us passing legislation. But I think we're going to have a great time. We'll have a great House Appropriations Committee with some. I'm happy to rejoining that committee with my colleagues.
I haven't met the new superintendent of public instruction. I assume that person is going to be very important in relation to your relationship with education. Do you take your guidance more from the governor or the superintendent of public instruction? How do you interact on behalf of all the kids throughout Montana?
Well, you know, I don't really take direction from the governor or from the superintendent of public instruction. As you know, legislature is an independent branch. We have a cordial relationship with the governor. We see, I personally see eye to eye with the governor on virtually everything he does, but there are disagreements that I have and that other members of the legislature will have, and that's the way our process works out. The superintendent of public instruction, I'm looking forward to seeing Superintendent Hedlund take the reins there. It's important for us on the legislature to have a good relationship with the with that agency. It's the agency that that moves over $1 billion a year. It's mostly pass through money to the schools, but also is in charge of assessing the effectiveness of programs. And to that end, one thing that has disappointed me, the committee I am on served during the interim and is an oversight committee, is the tendency we have in the legislature, and I'm sure you saw this in Congress as well, to appropriate money for programs and then move on to the next thing, without looking back to see how effective those programs are or how well we're spending taxpayer money. That's been a primary focus of my efforts over this last interim and the interim before that, and I'm looking forward to creating a relationship with the new superintendent of public instruction, whereby the superintendent it very proactively looks at the effectiveness of programs. This has simply not been the case in the past, and I suspect that that's not limited simply to education, but to most government activities. We pass legislation, we create programs, we move on. You could spend your entire legislative career doing nothing but looking back.
We have about 3 minutes left, Dave, and I can't miss the opportunity because of your background. You turned down an appointment to West Point as a young man because you wanted to get a real education from Montana State University in engineering. I always respected you for that. I think you got one B in your entire life. So did I. The rest were C's, but yours were not. Tell us a little bit about the university systems throughout the nation. What did you find at West Point? And I actually came up and visited you and had lunch with all the Montanans that I had appointed to the West Point at the time. But tell us a little bit about West Point, if you would, please.
Well, it's been a long time since I served there. Half of my 30-year career, I was on the faculty there. And the long and short of it is we had some great young people that would come to West Point, and they've gone on to serve our country well. I guess I have a perspective on education that based upon that, and I see college education should set a foundation for effective citizenship, and that's something that I think that's something that our university systems across the state should start embracing more than they do right now. With respect to Montana, take a look at the University of Montana, Montana State University. I think that they are well run. We have excellent leadership in both of those institutions. And some of the more troubling things you see, in, for instance, in the Ivy League schools and that sort of thing, simply don't happen here. And that is because our Montana University system is a Montana University system.
Well, thank you, Dave. And going to have to cut it off here. I missed a few of my breaks and cut people off, but I really appreciate you joining. And thank you for your service in the Montana legislature.
Thank you, Danny. It's always good, and we will play pinochle again next time we're together and see if we can beat our wives.
We are, in fact, the champions of the world. Just don't tell our wives because they think they're pretty good at it, too. David, thank you for joining us. And we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Again, I want to thank Aaron Flint for having the confidence in me and allowing me the opportunity to be his replacement as the host of this program for the next 3 days now. I finished my first. I haven't been fired. He may not be listening. Thank you very much.
On gold IRAs from Birch Gold.
Message and data rates may apply.
Welcome back. This is Denny Greenberg, former United States Congressman, and filling in for Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, as they said, former Congressman Denny Rehberg, and I haven't been fired by Aaron. He must not be listening to the program, or he'd call in and say, "What are you doing to my program?" I left it in good hands, but he didn't show me the whole board. It's very complicated, and I have a lot of respect for Aaron now, because this is one of those things that people are supposed to call in and don't. I'm supposed to call them and don't. And it hasn't gone off without a hitch, but it's been a lot of fun. And it's my way of maybe making a reconnection with the people of the state of Montana. I promised Montanans, and it was Glenn Marks's idea, who was in the Stevens administration. I was appointed lieutenant governor by Stan Stevens with 16 months left in his term. And I said, Glenn, nobody outside the city of Billings knows me. What do we do? And he said, foolishly, why don't you promise to visit all 56 counties every year while you're in public service? And that's a promise I kept. And so all the years I was lieutenant governor under Governor Stan Stevens, and then 4 years with Mark Roscoe, I traveled to all 56 counties every year. And I carried that forward when I was elected to the United States Congress in Washington, D.C. A lot harder because I'd have to fly to D.C. on Monday and back to Montana on Fridays and travel weekends. But I was able to travel to all 56 counties and, of course, the major communities I went to quite a bit. Interestingly, not that anybody cares, but I'm the longest serving United States Congressman representing the state of Montana. And you say, well, wait a minute, Pat Williams was there 18 years. Well, he didn't represent the whole state. He represented the state of Montana for 4 years. Rick Hill, 4 years. And then I came in, I served 12 years. And then every congressman after me, less than the 12 years. And we went all the way back to the 1800s, and nobody served as long as I did. Again, nobody cares, but I find it kind of unique and interesting and fun to think about how great it was to be able to represent the whole state. Would I want to represent the Eastern District now? Yeah, but I would miss Libby and Kalispell and Hamilton and Butte and Missoula and such. So tomorrow we have a full day, and I'll try and move it as quickly as possible because we're going to do a telethon. Aaron had set it up and asked if I'd be willing to do it. If not, he would reschedule it for later. And I said, no, I can do a telethon. And the telethon is going to be on behalf of Warriors and Quiet Waters. And it's an organization that gathers contributions, and what they do is they take veterans, PTSD, disabled, whatever, and take them on fishing and hunting trips throughout Montana. It's a great opportunity to contribute to a great cause. And then I'll also have Congressman Zinke on tomorrow, And obviously, he's a veteran, and he's certainly familiar with Warriors in Quiet Waters. But the entire 4 hours will be dedicated to veterans who we owe so much to. I know a lot of them, whether they're part of the American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, or whatever organization they belong to, and they definitely deserve our consideration and our thanks. So we'll start at 6 in the morning and finish at 10, and it'll all be about the veterans tomorrow. Today we did have the Mountain States Legal Foundation on. I hope some of you were able to listen in to that. That's an organization that it's full of lawyers down in Denver, but they have a board of directors. My wife is on the board as an attorney, free. Emily Jones, who is from Billings, Blair Jones, District Court Judge Blair Jones' daughter, Emily. She's on the board, free. We've had other Montanans on the board, and there's board members from Texas and Arizona and Utah and Colorado. And what they do is they take on cases, and they don't charge anything. Isn't that unique for an attorney that doesn't charge? But they have some really good cases they're carrying forward. And we heard from Will Truckman. I asked the producer, how do the people that maybe missed some of the segments that we talked about hear those? And I was told that there is an app, it's KBUL, and you can listen to today's program if you wish. I may take some of the pre-recorded comments and put them on the air, and that will be an opportunity for you to hear from some of the people that called in today. So, again, this is Danny Reberg. I'll be with you Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday as well. Any comments, you can go on the app and tell me I'm a dummy, what I said you don't agree with or you do agree with, and we hopefully will take some calls. So, good day, and have a good day.
Tell you what, Donald Trump's going to be president again. We can just sit back and relax and enjoy the holidays. Are you kidding me? Man, we got to keep our eye on the ball, especially right now. This lame duck Senate, they're going to try to ram through these left-wing judges that will rule against agriculture. They'll rule against oil, gas, coal, timber, you name it. And there's a lot more we got to keep our eye on. Montana Talks, we're going to keep our eye on the ball. But even if we drop the ball, you can call in. Statewide, 9 to 10. We'll be right back.